It is Thursday, November 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, we get an on-the-scene report from Mosul, Iraq, where Iraqi-led forces are fighting to oust Islamic State.
Islamic State militants are throwing back mortars into the neighborhoods, so that is slowing things down.
How is trade between the United States and China affected by Donald Trump's electoral victory? And we hear how some New Yorkers are spending Thanksgiving after a contentious election. It's all ahead. Iraqi-led forces say they've completely surrounded the contested city of Mosul, effectively cutting off Islamic State from supply routes to their main stronghold in Raqqa, Syria. According to officials with the Shiite Muslim paramilitary force Hashd al-Shaabi, the group linked up with Kurdish forces along the road that links Tar Afar to Sinjar west of Mosul, cutting off access to the road that leads to Syria. On Wednesday, a U.S.-led coalition airstrike took out another bridge across the Tigris River in Mosul. VOA correspondent Heather Murdoch visited Mosul Thursday. She tells me about the Iraqi campaign to oust Islamic State from the city.
Well, here, coming from the Eastern Front, they are steadily moving forward. They say it's really slow going because Islamic State militants are throwing back mortars into the neighborhoods. So that is slowing things down. They also have tons of stories about the various ways civilians are being used as human shields. Some soldiers say they saw civilians handcuffed to Islamic State militants the other day as they dragged them out of one building to move back. But they have been consistently moving back and not forward.
Now, you were inside the city of Mosul earlier today. What was it like? What did you see there?
Well, there's still mortars coming down inside of the city in the areas controlled by the Iraqi army. So there's a lot of damage. Everything's ruined. There's holes in walls, buildings blown up cars everywhere. All of the electricity has been cut. The locals say that the water was cut off by Islamic State militants when the army came in simply to punish the people. So people are pretty desperate, but also calm, because they also are relieved to have the army in charge at this point. Like, as we were driving in, we drove in with a couple of different cars and an army vehicle. All along the road, you see kids with victory signs, you know, waving at us. So they are pretty excited to be freed of Islamic State militants, but they're not sure what's going to happen next because of the lack of water and food aid and electricity.
Were you able to talk to any of the civilians about what conditions were like when Islamic State was in control?
Yes, they are very concerned about the time that they were with Islamic State militants was a terrible time for them. And they say that they were whipped for things like shaving their beards or smoking. And some civilians have told horrible stories from other places of people's fingers being cut off for smoking or heads being chopped off for owning a mobile phone. So there's all sorts of this violence. And then there's also an underlying feeling of oppression, they say, when they lived under Islamic State, because there were so many rules. And the children couldn't go to school because the Islamic State militants took over the schools and forced the teachers to teach their own agenda, which was violence. So most of the kids didn't go to school, had nothing to do, and most of the parents were out of work. So extreme poverty was also a big problem under Islamic State rule.
Yeah. Now, when you say extreme poverty, you mean people were not able to buy anything, I assume, you know, food.
Yes. I mean, there was some food available, so they say, but there was no money the only money that they had was what they scraped together and had saved before Islamic State came in. So they had to make it stretch for a long time. And also Islamic State militants came through neighborhoods and basically swept up people's extra money by charging them for things. Like, for example, one guy told me he shaved his beard, so they took his ID and gave him a piece of paper, an Islamic State ID. They said if he wanted his Iraqi ID back, he'd have to pay, you know, several hundred dollars. So Islamic State made a lot of money in these small ways, and it left a lot of really poor people just completely destitute.
And what about displaced people, those that were trying to, you know, avoid Islamic State? And you know, is it known how they are faring?
Yes, people have been coming out by the tens of thousands out of Mosul for the past 6 weeks. 6 weeks ago, the refugee camps around Mosul were empty. They were being built. Now many of them are full and more are being built. It's really concerning because no matter how much resources people pour into taking care of the people displaced from Mosul and the surrounding areas, it seems like it'll be impossible for it to ever be enough. There's so many people in such a large area that has been completely flattened. And people want to go home, but often their homes are destroyed and there's nowhere to go. It's also a problem with Islamic State left behind bombs and booby traps. And until the experts go into buildings to clear them out, it's not safe for people to go home. And I've been told that the work being done to clean out these houses is going really slow, and it might take years to finish.
That's VOA correspondent Heather Murdoch reporting from the outskirts of Mosul, Iraq. Well, joining me is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's trending?
Well, today is Thanksgiving here in the U.S., so the trending hashtag today is hashtag I am thankful for. And as we heard in Heather's report there, there's a lot of terrible turmoil around the world. So we're seeing a lot of people, in light of that, expressing gratitude on social media for things like their freedoms that they have, health, friends and family, not material things necessarily, but these things that are really held dear by a lot of people. But on the issue of family, that's an interesting one, especially after our contentious election. There's a lot of people preparing for potentially contentious conversations around the dinner table about politics. So never fear, though. Social media has all these tips and ways to avoid talking politics, a way to diffuse potentially contentious situations with family members when the election comes up as a topic of conversation. But I liked the one tweet from American game show host Pat Sajak. He just said, "More turkey, less politics." So hopefully people will heed that this Thanksgiving and focus on the important things, the friends and family, the things that bring us together and not the things that divide us.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Andrew, and please have a happy Thanksgiving. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Some of the top news stories trending. A truck bombing south of Baghdad kills at least 70 people. Islamic State is suspected in that attack. Billionaire Wilbur Ross is expected to be named Donald Trump's commerce secretary. A cyber attack exposes sensitive data on more than 134,000 U.S. sailors. And as Americans gather to give thanks, President-elect Donald Trump calls for unity. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A star called KIC 846-2852 is still getting a lot of attention a year after scientists noticed the star's unusual light fluctuations. Theories about what caused the star's weird dimming patterns vary from it being surrounded by planetary material or by a flock of comets to the idea that there is a nearby megastructure built by an advanced race of aliens. A new study has found that along with its strange pattern of light fluctuations, the star's overall brightness has also faded slowly and steadily during the 4 years of Kepler observation. The study's two authors found that the star had dimmed by nearly 1% over the first 3 years of the 4 years, and then by 2% over the following 6 months of study. The star's brightness remained at that level for the final 6 months of the mission. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at new efforts to reduce malaria. A senior Chinese trade official said Wednesday in Washington his government is paying close attention to statements made by President-elect Donald Trump on bilateral trade relations. Mr. Trump, on the campaign trail, accused the Chinese of manipulating their currency, the yuan, for unfair trade advantage, a charge it denies. The president-elect has also threatened punitive tariffs on Chinese goods to reduce Washington's yawning trade deficit with Beijing.
关于关税的问题，中国和美国都是世贸组织的成员。
Deputy International Trade Minister Zhang Shichen said both China and the U.S. are members of the World Trade Organization. Mr. Trump, he added, will be reminded when he takes office that the U.S. should honor its obligations under WTO rules. Shane Oliver, chief economist at the Sydney-based AMP Capital, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty China's concern is understandable.
They've been trading with the U.S. for a long time, and they would obviously be concerned if they have punitive tariffs imposed on them, particularly if they think it's done in an unfair fashion. I guess there's a lot of water to go under the bridge, though, before we get to that point. It may involve the U.S. administration early next year declaring China to be a currency manipulator and then threatening to put these tariffs on if they don't change their ways. There's a lot of complications around the issue, though, because in recent times, there's actually been downwards pressure on the value of the Chinese currency. So, I mean, if the Chinese are so labelled as a currency manipulator, they may actually decide, well, we'll just float the renminbi, we'll move to a floating exchange rate system, and I reckon it's almost certain that the renminbi would fall in value, not rise, which would be precisely the wrong thing that a Trump administration would want, because a falling renminbi would make Chinese goods actually cheaper. The Trump administration will have to think these things through quite clearly. And I think at the end of the day, the most likely outcome will be one that involves some win for both sides. I think imposing up to a 45% tariff on China could actually be negative for many Americans, because the bottom line is that when they go to Walmart, they'll be paying more for their goods, particularly given that many of them are made in China. So it won't necessarily return America to the days of the past when most manufactured goods were made in America. I think those days are probably long gone. So I think Donald Trump will be looking for wins here, but he'll probably try and come up with something that works out to be a bit of a compromise.
Well, as you know, there is a yawning U.S. trade gap with China, I believe somewhere north of $300 billion last year. Is China a currency manipulator in your view?
I think there was no doubt that it once was. If you go back a decade or so ago when the Chinese currency was artificially depressed and that made China artificially competitive compared to the US and many other countries, it was in that sense manipulating its currency to its advantage. But I think it's hard to make that claim now because we have seen a steady rise between 2005. We saw generally a steady rise in the value of the Chinese currency.
China on Thursday weakened its currency to above 6.9 to the dollar for the first time in 8 years amid a surging U.S. currency. The greenback has also reached a record high against the Indian rupee of nearly 69 to the dollar following Mr. Trump's election victory on November 8th. Researchers say that giving anti-malarial drugs to older children can significantly reduce overall transmission of disease. Currently, most such programs are limited to the under fives, but a study by the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, shows that expanding the intervention can lower the number of malaria cases. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
The World Health Organization estimates there were 214 million new cases of malaria in 2015 and 438,000 deaths, with by far the majority of fatalities in sub-Saharan Africa. In Senegal, health workers from charities like Speak Up Africa have been testing a new approach, giving preventative anti-malarial drugs to children up to the age of 10 during the rainy season when malaria prevalence is highest. It's known as seasonal malaria chemoprevention, or SMC. Researchers from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine conducted a study of 200,000 children in the programme. Professor Paul Milligan led the investigation.
The treatments don't have to be repeated at strictly four-week intervals, and that's quite challenging in terms of implementing that in rural Africa. But despite that, countries have been quick to adopt this new approach.
And it's showing results. In Senegal, the SMC program more than halved cases of malaria in children under 10. It also reduced cases in those above 10 years of age by a quarter by helping to reduce transmission of the disease.
By expanding the age range, one is then treating a larger fraction of the parasite reservoir which is the source of infection to mosquitoes.
The SMC program has been rolled out to 11 countries, reaching about 15 million children up to the age of 5 in 2016. Professor Milligan says the latest results show the programs should be expanded to include older children.
What we found was that if you're going door to door, it doesn't take much extra time to treat older children. And that if you go out of school hours, then you can get high coverage even during term time.
Milligan says the next step is to identify other parts of Africa that could benefit from expanding the SMC programme to older children. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. Today is Thanksgiving Day here in the U.S. It's a national holiday when Americans get together, often with extended family and friends, to enjoy a festive meal and offer gratitude. This year, Thanksgiving follows a bitterly contentious presidential election season that often strained relations between family members who back different candidates. VOA's Adam Phillips asked some fellow New Yorkers how Donald Trump's victory will affect their Thanksgiving.
It's Tuesday, 2 days before Thanksgiving in Manhattan's Times Square. Like many tourists here, Mary Stokowski of Minneapolis, Minnesota, and her sister Peggy Brown of Tustin, California, are reflecting on the recent presidential election. Mary speaks first.
I like Mr. Trump. I think that he's going to do a good job. If we let him do some things that he would like to do, maybe not make some quick judgments, I think he might do a good job for everybody.
Are there people within your family who are more for the Clinton folks? And I'm wondering, you know, if there's going to be a conversation. Are people going to be avoiding the subject?
No, I think that there will be some listening going on, but there will be some strong opinions that will be said. One of our nieces is a very staunch Mrs. Clinton fan, so she was crying, she was ranting and raving on Facebook, and so we might not want to get into it with her because she might run out the door. I don't know.
What do you say?
In my family in California, we just stay away from the subject on Thanksgiving. We want to have a really good time, and if you start getting into politics, it alienates people, so we stay away from it.
Silence about the election will also be on the menu for Dina Sayed Ahmed's family, but for different reasons.
My family is Muslim. We're all Arab. My parents are immigrants. My two older sisters are also immigrants. So I think you can kind of get the idea that we're all kind of opposed to Trump, given our background and given the way he's been speaking about people who come from our background.
Is there fear in your family?
Naturally, there would be fear because you can tell that I'm Muslim. You could tell that I'm not white. I mean, I don't know. We haven't really talked about it.
Are you going to talk about that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, that's been the coping mechanism so far, like just to ignore it until something really bad happens.
Israeli-American Renat Pinchas says the Jewish family that's invited her for turkey and all the trimmings takes an opposite approach. Her hosts were Hillary supporters, but their in-laws backed Trump.
And they have been at odds for months now, and they're all very, very temperamental. So I'm sure it'll be very angst-ridden slash exciting slash hopefully coming together at some point Thanksgiving.
What did your friend yourself say about the upcoming meal?
She was hoping she could kind of bury the hatchet, settle everything, and hopefully have some peace. But I don't think anyone's opinions are going to be changed. I think everyone's just going to be really stubborn and stick to their own guns. So probably things will escalate to a point where it gets tense, and then we'll just bring out the dessert or something.
Levi Drake from Fort Myers, Florida, comes from an interracial family where the votes were divided.
The black side of my family voted Trump, where the white side voted mixed.
You think there's going to be any tension around the dinner table?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. There's not a chance. They'll share their views, but obviously, you know, regardless if you like it or not, you have to hope the best for our president-elect and hope that he makes the right decisions. Also, it's like no one wants to be in bad spirits.
Cesar Romero is a Mexican-American whose entire family voted for Clinton. For them, Trump's victory will mean somber spirits.
We really weren't expecting a Trump victory. And it's just like a lot of soul-searching now. Like, I'm a U.S. citizen, fortunately, but not everyone is in that same boat, you know? With Thanksgiving, since my family's pretty left-wing, I think we're just going to be thinking of ways of how to help people and, like, figure out, like, why we had this vote.
Politics will be a big part of the conversation for Jeff and his family from Minnesota. They were just as passionate about supporting Trump as the Renaros were about supporting Clinton.
I think we're all very thankful for it. I don't know if it necessarily has anything to do with Thanksgiving, but it's just knowing that things are going to change.
Indeed, most Americans can agree that the transfer of power from President Barack Obama to President-elect Donald Trump will signal some dramatic changes, both in tone and policy. However, the expectation that the transfer will be peaceful, if not always smooth, is one big reason for gratitude for all Americans this Thanksgiving Day, 2016. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Well, and more stories of political controversy. The CEO of one of the most popular social media websites, Reddit, is facing heavy criticism from users after he admitted to secretly altering comments on a pro-Donald Trump message board. Steve Huffman admitted to changing the content of the posts, which were directed at him, to instead show the names of the moderators of the subreddit The Donald, a community within Reddit, where users share images, news stories, and other material related to the president-elect. Well, that's our show for today. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
Editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
The fourth Thursday in November is a national day of Thanksgiving in the United States. The tradition is a very old one, dating back to the arrival of some of the earliest English settlers in North America in the 17th century, who, after their first successful harvests, paused to celebrate their bounty and give thanks for surviving their first terrible winter in what was then a wilderness. Falling in the autumn, Thanksgiving has much in common with harvest holidays in other nations and cultures, such as Vietnam's Trung Thu celebration and Hô Mùa, the annual yam festival in Ghana. Still with its turkey dinners, family gatherings, football games, and parades, there's something about the day that is distinctively American. Together with the 4th of July, when the U.S. marks its independence from Great Britain, it's a truly national holiday that includes all citizens in a common purpose, regardless of religious, political, or ethnic persuasion. It also is a time for people to look back at the year, take stock, and think about the future. With our nation dealing with crises in Eastern Europe, the Middle East, and West Africa, the year's looming uncertainties likely will be on many minds today. President Abraham Lincoln proclaimed the first official Thanksgiving amid similar serious circumstances, the American Civil War. But like their colonial ancestors, Americans are essentially an optimistic people. Surrounded by friends and family, today as in the past, they will enter into the spirit of the day, giving thanks for life's blessings and the promise of the future living in a free land.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.